For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey guys, very happy to announce our new sponsor of the show, and that is Run Your Mouth Coffee. Run Your Mouth Coffee is where delicious coffee meets uncensored speech. The co-founders are libertarians who have paired their love of fresh roasted coffee with the healthy hatred of censorship. Run Your Mouth Coffee was founded by two libertarian podcasters you might know, John Odermatt and Ben Pange. The coffee beans are sourced from around the world and roasted to order in the U.S., so you receive your fresh roasted coffee at its peak flavor. If you're feeling rebellious, check out the Rebellion Beans. They're aged for 30 days in a bourbon barrel, then roasted to order. Go to rymcoffee.com and use promo code PTTW for 10% off and free shipping. And guys, there are a lot of reasons to support this company. I mean, not only is it a just great product and a product that you're already using, but with woke capitalism taking over, you don't want to support big corporations that are going woke. I mean, Starbucks, it's overpriced, it's overrated. Folgers is, I mean, they're probably woke. I haven't checked, but you know, anytime you have like a Chick-fil-A in the news, it's a big deal. So I just assume default settings, it's, you know, they're woke. So go with the anti-woke people. Support like-minded libertarians. So go to rymcoffee.com, use promo code PTTW, and get 10% off and free shipping. All right, let's get into the show.
Hey guys, welcome back to Paul's to the Wall. I am your host, Mike Paul. And today I am joined for the second time on this show with the great Clint Russell, host of Liberty Lockdown, arguably the fastest growing podcast in the Liberty Circle.
I'm trying my best, man. Is my mic sound all right? I just got recently set up. So.
Oh, you sound great.
Okay, good.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's kind of the same. That's the reason why I wanted to have you on for this episode was I originally wanted to do this in September, because we were taking a month off of politics, and I was like, I'm going to pick topics that I really enjoy, want to learn more about, interview people that know more about it than myself. And I picked personal finance because clearly you're a younger guy who's done very well financially to the point where you can now transfer careers into this. So I was like, well, here's a libertarian minded guy who has proved it on the field that probably could teach everyone a few tricks. So, yeah, give us a little bit of your backstory. I know you've been pretty open about being in the real estate business and how you got to where you were, but give us just kind of like your what I did for summer vacation kind of backstory.
Yeah, I started working for Verizon Wireless back in the day as a cell phone salesman. But well, if you want the full story, I started as, you know, working for my dad as a fan installer in San Bernardino when I was 14 years old. That was my first job, 120 degree heat, and I was putting up ceiling fans, and it was the worst job ever. And from that, I learned that I wanted to use my brain for work moving forward. So after high school, I went to college. I had a friend die in front of me, which was horrible. So I dropped out of college, and then I started working for Verizon Wireless. And I was just like, I'm gonna make some money and see what I can do. And I ended up being one of the top 10 sales reps in the country for Verizon. And I was like, okay, well, I have sales skill. I've now learned that. And then after that, I decided to go back to college because I realized that sales of that nature were very high pace, but they would burn you out really rapidly. So I went back to college just to finish my degree. Got a business management degree. And then out of college, I entered it in 08, you know, right into kind of the teeth of the recession. And I had lots of job opportunities, but my dad was dealing with a whole bunch of foreclosures because he was a mortgage broker. And he's like, hey, I could really use your assistance in liquidating these things. So I started doing that for him, found a lot of success there, found that that was very much up my alley and my skill set really aligned with that. And from that, I worked for him for 5 years, and then I went on to start my own company, which was also a private money mortgage company. My dad retired, and basically 7-8 years later, lockdowns happen. I've, you know, accrued a bunch of personal wealth and investments, and I just said, okay, I'm gonna start screaming about the lockdowns and stop making money.
Well, you kind of proven that whatever you you know, dip your toe into, you can be successful at. So I think you've done pretty well just a year and a half into it. So what kind of habits or principles do you live by when it comes to personal finance? What are some just good advice to someone who has no idea, because, you know, say they got out of public school and they teach you nothing about how to manage money or do anything to make yourself self-sufficient? What are just some good, you know, if you have like a few rules or principles to live by when it comes to your personal finance?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been very frugal. I think it starts there. I think it's really important that you don't spend above your means. I've also, very early on in life, I learned the power of compounding interest. So I learned that, you know, if you delayed gratification, if you were willing to sacrifice the present for the future became unbelievably bright. So that was largely what I think that's probably the biggest trait that has got me to where I'm at today, is that I just simply, I was willing to delay gratification for a very long time. And because of that, I constantly accrued wealth and invested it and grew the wealth and invested it. And I never spent anything. And then anytime I were to spend money on myself, it would always be an appreciating asset, like a house. So I think that, you know, just kind of knowing where your money grows versus where it depletes itself, and only putting your wealth there, I think that's probably the biggest, trick. If it's a trick, that I would tell people, you know, make sure that you're not sacrificing your future for the present. In fact, you should probably be sacrificing your present for the future. And I think that's what I've done a good job at.
100%. That's something that I've anecdotally learned myself as well. And that's kind of what got me into the whole Liberty podcast world. Was I was very into being an entrepreneur and managing my own money when I was younger. Had a couple ventures that tried and failed, and I'm currently employed mostly because I have a family and I just don't have time for the ventures I want to chase. But I remember when I was, before I got into even big into politics, I was always into working full time. I was living at home. I was buying and selling high-end sports cars, Corvettes, Vipers, CTSV Cadillacs. Like, I always had flashy stuff. My friends thought either my dad was buying it for me or I was dealing drugs. But
I've gotten that a lot of times.
Right. And I was like, no, I live at home. I'm working full-time. I'm not going to college. And I just have a really flashy side hustle. Like, what you're seeing, that's my bank account. So, yeah, it's a $20,000 car, $30,000 car. It looked expensive, but I was always delaying gratification the same way. I was never to keep it. I would have it for a few months, sell it for more than I paid, buy the next one. And now I'm 31. I've had over 50 to 60 cars. It's slowed down in the last 5 years since I had kids.
Sure.
But I found, oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, that's very similar to what I've done. You know, first property I bought was a mobile home, and that's where I lived when I was 25, 26 years old. For a year and a half, I guess. And I ended up losing my ass on it because the real estate market took a shit. The reason I bought it is because I couldn't afford any real estate in Southern California at the time, because real estate was so expensive in 2005, 2006. For those that are too young, they don't know, but it basically, the prices you're experiencing today is the same pricing structure that we had back then. So I the only opportunity I had was to buy a mobile home, and I bought it, you know, super cheap because I tore out this old one. I put in a brand new one. I was in for 130 grand. It was valued probably at 200 grand. So I felt like a genius. I was like, hey, I bought this thing that I would have got for 200. I got it for 130. Like, look at me. Market takes a shit. I ended up selling the thing for 105. So I lost 25 grand on it, but ultimately it was a valuable lesson. And I was able to, in that period, I was going to college full time. I was taking over 20 units a semester. I was really grinding. Like, I was trying to get done with college because I had delayed a lot because of my friend's passing and my depression from that. So the first place I buy is this house in Escondido, which is not the nicest part of San Diego, but it's not bad either. And I get this 4,000 square foot house and it's beautiful. It's on 1.7 acres of land. It's phenomenal. but it's beat to hell, and I end up spending $100,000 renovating it. But anyways, the reason I'm bringing this up is to correlate to what you were saying is that, you know, I, even though I had this giant house in Escondido, I put myself in the, I subdivided it kind of, I put up a wall around the stairs and I lived downstairs and I rented out the top three bedrooms upstairs. So I had the shitty area. I rent out the nice area to these tenants. They cover my mortgage. I lived there for free for 4 years. Same thing. Then I have this opportunity to buy this house in Carlsbad once again. Well, now I'm doing a little bit better. I have a business. I'm like, all right, I get to live upstairs this time. So I live upstairs, but I rent out the downstairs. And I at the time, Airbnb is a really successful thing. So I end up Airbnb my downstairs. It has this ocean view, water view. I'm getting like $200 a night for my downstairs rental. And I end up living there for free for 7 years. Wow. So basically, I lived for free for 11 years. But the key is I always sacrificed. What I was doing with that wasn't necessary. I didn't have to do any of that. I could have kept that place to myself. I could have enjoyed it. Like, people always think like, oh, you have money. You got lucky, you know, like, sure. Right. That happens sometimes too. But also there is a tremendous amount of sacrifice that goes into this. If you're not doing it through trust funds and things like that, like, is it a major sacrifice to me? No, it's not. But it is a sacrifice that a lot of people aren't willing to make. They're not willing to have strangers in the home. I had over 350 groups of people live with me over a 4 or 5 year period. Did I make a lot of money from it? Yes. But also, when I have guests down there, I'm not allowed to have people over because I can't play music because my reviews will be shitty. So like, these are all of the sacrifices that you're making. And as you make more and more sacrifices, the more, you know, in the black you end up.
Yeah, dude, I don't know if I would be willing to do that. I like my privacy, but hey, I understand the formula. That's the way to go.
Yeah. Well, keep in mind though, what I did was I built a deck addition and I wrapped stairs around it so that they had a private entrance. So
cool.
I actually did have my privacy. I just did not have the capacity to live how I wanted to, like blaring music in the middle of the night and stuff.
Yeah. kind of, I was bringing it back home to podcasting on what I was talking about with my journey. Like my first passion was, I like cars, I like business, I like buying and selling. I always looked at my bank account like a video game where I was going for a higher score.
Yeah,
you know, and it starts off with $500 and you hit your first 1,000, your first 2,000 when you're a teenager, and you keep trying to build it up. And that's when my brother turned me on to podcasts, and the first liberty-minded one I found was Jason Stapleton. And right away I was like, oh dude, this guy's entrepreneur, successful, you know, talks a lot about all these skills and he's liberty minded. Like, I was sold. And then that's when there's kind of like a divide between like the Dave Smith crowd and the Stapleton crowd these days. But back then, this was like 2016 ish. That's my brother was telling me he's like, check out this guy that was on Rogan, this Dave Smith guy. He's great. So I was like, oh, I'll check him out. And I think I looked up like a Legion of Skanks episode or something. And it was like just the wrong one at the wrong time. And I listened to it and I'm like, what the fuck are you getting out of this? This is like, this is so vulgar. Like, I didn't know about part of the problem. I just thought it was just Legion of Skanks. But so I didn't really get into Dave for another like 6 months. My brother kept telling me, he's like, dude, this Dave guy is probably my favorite podcaster. I'm like, dude, I tried it. It just didn't, like, Jason doesn't even swear. He just talks entrepreneurial stuff. And then Dave sat in for Jason's show a couple times back in the day. And that's when I heard him talk, just him being Dave. And I was like, oh shit.
I didn't even know that happened. That's awesome.
Yeah. So that's how my brother heard him on Rogan. Then I heard him sit in for Stapleton. Yeah. Back like 2016. And that's kind of like what crossed it over. I was like, well, I'm really interested in this. And this podcasting thing seems really fun. And, you know, we did one podcast, my brother and I, about cars back then for like 25 episodes till the kids came along. But, that kind of went on the back burner once again and until just last year. But that kind of crossed me over. And then I started getting more and more into politics and saying, you know, what, you know, how all these principles kind of transfer, like the way you live through all these libertarian principles. You know, there's a lot of stuff you can prove on the field and people can kind of see, well, like, if your beliefs are so good, like, you know, why aren't you rich, you know? But if you really are being self-sufficient and applying yourself and not asking for handouts, it kind of all went hand in hand. I mean, do you believe that your political ideology had a lot to do with your business strategy?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, particularly for me, because I was a money manager. I mean, I was responsible for evaluating risk. I mean, and on a macro and micro level. So my entire job was to make sure that I ushered their capital into secure investments. if you don't understand economics, you aren't a good libertarian, and you are also are not a good money manager. So I think that, you know, my experience, my background, the, you know, the fact that I have such a phenomenal track record with investing other people's capital as well as my own, is hard evidence that our ideology works. And I try and express that in a way that isn't braggadocious, but encouraging. You know, like I'm trying to let people know they have a tool in their tool belt that very few people have. If you understand how economics works, if you understand that fiat currency is a game, you can still play that game, but you know what you're doing versus other people who are trend following and they're just basically throwing their money like a casino. I can still play in the casino, but I have an edge. I have the capacity to basically beat the house because I understand what game I'm playing, whereas most people don't. So I think that it's very important, actually. And I think that my ideology, my philosophy, my political beliefs all align tremendously so with both my business background as well as just how my brain works.
I couldn't agree more. And that's kind of a good segue into what's going on right now in the world for people who may want to pursue being self-employed right now with, you know, the big jab nasty being on the plate by their employer. That's kind of one of the reasons why I find this information to be so vital right now. What would be your advice to someone who, let's say they've had poor financial decisions or they're paycheck to paycheck, or maybe they've got a big family and maybe they're in an employer that's going to put them into an ultimatum here and they got to make a big decision to go with their principles or cave, you know, what, let's say somebody's willing to get pushed out and stick to their principles. What would be some good advice to someone to right away start being more financially responsible and kind of move into self-employment?
Well, unfortunately, with money management and investments, it's not something that you can snap your fingers. You can't really will your way into instantly being financially free. Like, it takes time. This is why I talk about delayed gratification. It's like, I did that for my entire 20s. I had way more money than I was spending, and I was constantly stockpiling and reinvesting and sacrificing in the present for a better future. So I can't tell people, if you're living paycheck to paycheck and you're on the verge of eviction or foreclosure or something like that, and your boss is coming to you saying, hey, you have to get this V or I'm going to fire you. You know, if you have kids, you're in a very rough position. And you know, I don't want to shame you at all, but I would say, I hope you take this moment to reflect on the past decisions you've made. And you really think about, why are you in this position? Because you've had 18 months. I mean, you've had 18 months to really see the trajectory of this and see kind of where this is going. And you still are paycheck to paycheck. Like, I know it sounds like I'm being mean, but I genuinely do not mean to be. I am simply saying you had time. So like, now you're up against it. This is the product of that. You know, this is the reason you're here is because of prior behavior. And I hope that you reflect on that and you change it in the moment so that say after this, there's a social credit score or some other nonsense, tyrannical bullshit that gets rolled out, that you're in a better position where you can take a stand. And all that being said, I hope that even if you're paycheck to paycheck, you are still willing to take a stand. And I hope that you're willing to sacrifice some serious things to try and stem the tide of totalitarianism. Like that's where we're headed, in my opinion. And, you know, I'm fortunate in the sense that I'm in a position where I can tell employers and the government, and a whole bunch of people, private businesses, to fuck off if they want me to have it. I hope that more people will follow in my footsteps and get themselves in that position as well. And I really hope that didn't come off as if I was just being a dickhead to everybody, because I do feel for people. But I just hope you understand that you may be sacrificing, once again, you're sacrificing the future for your present if you cave in this moment.
Right. It's kind of like that saying that, you know, the best time to plant a tree was 30 years ago. The next best time is today.
Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, there are outliers. There are people who are financially responsible, who've had things outside of their control, medical, you know, emergencies or something that can ruin them. So there's those kind of outliers. But by and large, I think it's like over 50% of Americans don't have $500 put away for an emergency. So those are the kind of people where it's like, I don't know if it's the public education system we can blame or what. I mean,
here's the thing. I'm speaking to libertarians here. So right. Like, I am not lecturing everybody. I'm saying if you understand the things that you and I do and you're still destitute, you're doing something wrong because you know all of these things that I'm talking about and you still haven't done anything to get yourself in a better position. The rest of the people that don't understand libertarianism, they don't understand Austrian economics, they don't understand business cycle theory, they don't understand any of this. I have a lot more sympathy for them. The libertarians that are paycheck to paycheck, I'm like, yo, brother, get it together.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah, I mean, you know, we're in a fairly decent spot. I mean, sounds like I was very like-minded as the way you were through your 20s. I wouldn't be willing probably to live with people. That's probably where I draw my line. Just like, I mean, I'm out on 5 acres right now in the country. I value my privacy so much. Sure, so I found other avenues to make income. But I was always way below my means. I mean, even right now, I named off all those flashy cars I used to have. Today, I have a 2004 Prius with a salvaged title. That's what I daily drive. There so you go. 1,000 a week, and it's just a tool. I don't give a shit about it.
Good job, Dad. Yeah. Your kids will appreciate you.
Exactly. It's just delayed gratification. So when they're older, we could have, you know, something nicer. And I still will never waste money on something that's stupid purchase, but well,
let me cut you off there. I'm about to buy a 2022 Corvette, so
oh hell yes. Like,
but the thing is, I drove an 09 Pontiac G6 for 11 years, so there, like, I once again, even and in that time I was making enormous money. So like, I even though I'm going to be driving something flashy here soon,
yeah,
you know, I'm almost 40 years old, you know, like, yeah. Let me have my midlife crisis, and I earned it. So fuck you if you have a problem with it.
Hell yeah. No, that's awesome. And I support your choice. I'm a big Corvette guy. So thank that's you, awesome. Yeah, I mean, but then, you know, I was kind of the same mentality. I did a collector car auction venture with my dad when I was 23. We did two in 15 months, completely did everything. I mean, set up a website, recruited all the stuff, got all the licensing. I mean, it was like my first business venture. First one, we lost money. Second one, we broke even. Third one, we were poised to make money, but there's a lot of personal decisions. You know, I want my dad to be my dad, not my business partner. That kind of came clear. Also, I realized I'd never get married because I was working like 7 days a week, like nights. And I'm like, you know what? I kind of want to have a family someday. Then, you know, careful what you wish for, because, you know, a couple years later, meet a girl with a kid, get her pregnant kind of fast, get her married, put some twins through her. And then within 3 years, I had 4 kids. So
you sound like Josh Smith.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. But that kind of like kind of calibrated what I wanted out of life. Because I was ready to be like, I'm never going to get married. I'm just going to keep going, putting money away, doing this. This formula is working. I didn't go to college. I didn't have any debt. I didn't get my first credit card or auto loan until I was 25. I paid cash for everything to that point. I was just terrified of debt. But once I had kids, I was kind of like, you know, I'm definitely not wealthy by any standard. But we're, for our age, pretty comfortable. And we have one income on a 6-person family right now out in our house. So
you're killing it.
I mean, yeah, we're happy, and I've reprioritized, and I'm in with a great company that I really enjoy my work right now. And I think at the moment I'm safe for the, you know, the mandate,
sure.
But we'll see if the goalposts move here.
Let me add real quick that, you know, I think what you said there is really key, is that you said your priorities changed. If you're young and you have a family, my rules shift a little bit, you know, like, mm-hmm. You're not going to be able to accumulate as much wealth and save and invest and do all the things that I've done, because I've done it as a single man. So like, I'm not trying to chastise those people in particular, because your priority has been raising a family. My priority has been financial freedom, and then I want to have a family. So
sure,
whatever order you want to do it in. But I will say this too, it's a hell of a lot easier if you prioritize financial freedom before you have kids. So
hell yes,
you know, consider that before you get someone pregnant.
Or get married. For sure. And I don't recommend my route either. We got the wagon ahead of the horse really quick,
right.
But hey, you know, we made it work.
Good.
But yeah, no, it's 100% agree. I mean, it's one of those things that I came to a realization that I can keep doing what I'm doing. I'm just not going to be around for my kids, and it might put a strain on my marriage. Like, yep. I could keep hustling. I mean, I've always bought and sold snowmobiles too, so I can spot a deal, run 2 hours, go grab it. Like, I've been doing that all, you know, all throughout my summers when I was younger. And I was like, I can do all this. I just won't be around. And my wife's going to get tired of it eventually. And then I'll end up, you know, very wealthy and lonely and seeing my kids on weekends and holidays.
Exactly.
So it's, there is a balance there. But like you said, I think priority one, number one, is getting set up before you start a family. It's like when people talk about minimum wage, how you can't raise a family on minimum wage. It's like,
you're not supposed
start
to
start a family. Yeah.
You're not supposed to have kids and be on minimum wage salary. Like,
right.
Doesn't work.
Right. But no, I think that's a very good rule. Everyone's got to kind of find out what's right for them. And, you know, I heard that the debate that Dave and Jason had on Lions of Liberty, and Dave pointed out to Jason that, you know, some people, like, monetary success isn't everything. Like, they have other goals, you know?
Yep.
And I think that's everyone's unique situation. However, having financial freedom, it allows you so much more freedom in everything.
And it allows you to pursue some of those other goals. You know, if your goal is to be some Buddhist monk and to find enlightenment, it helps a lot if you can actually have a roof over your head. You know, it does. It helps.
Right.
So unless you want to go to India and live in the mountains or something like that, or go into a monastery, like, you know, more power to you. Like, none of this applies to someone who truly wants to do away with materialism and things like that. But if you intend to, you know, pursue, say, an artist's life, or you want to be a musician, it's going to take a long runway for you to have success. I mean, I think a perfect example is me with this podcast. This is an artistic endeavor, is what I'm basically doing. I'm putting myself out there in my late 30s into a venue I know nothing about, and I'm trying to make a second career out of this. I couldn't have done this if I was living paycheck to paycheck. It wouldn't have worked. So these are the types of things that, because of my delayed gratification, because of the past sacrifices that I've made, it has laid the groundwork, or the foundation from which I can take extraordinary risks, like spending 18 months screaming into a microphone with hardly anybody listening. And then all of a sudden people start listening. Like, if I didn't have this financial safety net to take this leap, you know, I probably would have given up after 3 months and gone back to doing what I did financially. So I think that there's a lesson in there for sure.
Yeah, no, I think you're you got a lot of thrust off your runway because it's very fast, fast paced. I mean, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, trust me when I tell you, I did not expect to have the. I mean, I listened to Dave for 5 years, and I listened to Rogan for a decade, and, you know, when I started my show, in less than a year, I was on part of the problem. I mean,
that's crazy.
Think about how nutty that is. Like, the guy, like, he was definitely my primary inspiration for doing what I'm doing. And to, in less than a year, to be on his show is just, it's astonishing.
An accomplishment for sure.
Yeah. But, I mean, I still can't believe it.
Yeah. And clearly your experience through your career gave you the ability to speak competently on these issues too, which is why people listen to you. Because I remember I heard you on Mark Claire's show. Mm-hmm. And he kind of said, like, you know, you're not someone living in their parents' basement libertarian. Like, you're someone who's clearly proved it on the field. So people listen because they're like, okay, this guy's doing something right. Like,
yeah, no, I think that's so true. And it's a huge problem in the libertarian sphere is that, you know, a lot of people that have free time are young and they haven't done much with their life. So it's like, you know, I'm not saying that I'm any better than them. I'm just saying I have different life experiences that they simply don't have. Like, I have managed hundreds of millions of dollars of investments. Like, that is something that you can't bullshit your way into, and you can't talk about it intelligently unless you've done it. And I think that those types of things give me a competitive advantage in the podcast sphere that very few people can actually match up to. So I think that, you know, whether or not you want to do what I did, I think that it's a good idea to have proven yourself in other industries and have some sort of foundation from which you can, you know, speak as an authority, so that you can actually, like, stand apart.
For sure. Yeah. And, you know, I know we talked about people who may have been paycheck to paycheck going into these problems, but, you know, there are people that are probably similar to myself who are financially stable, for less of a better term, not wealthy, but definitely have a cushion for an emergency. And I was kind of, I've been really losing sleep over this with all the mandate stuff going on and figuring out what am I going to do? And, you know, I think I'm safe as of right now. However, I will, like, this is my hill. Like, I'm not going to, I have something to prove to my children that you never compromise what's right. So I'm prepared for whatever happens. And I've been pursuing different avenues of what I could do in the event that things go the way I don't want them to go. And I realized just yesterday, I made this purchase that something I've been interested in for a couple of years that I've really been wanting to just own as a tool, because I love building stuff and love doing woodwork, is a CNC router. So I was like, yesterday, I was like, you know what? I've been thinking about this for 2 years. I talked to my wife. I was like, let's just buy it. Like, we got the space now. We got the bigger house. I have a 3-car detached garage where I can build my shop out. And I was like, here's the thing. Like, I want this as kind of a toy right now, just to build stuff and learn something, just to scratch an itch. But if shit does hit the fan, like, you bet your ass, I'll be in that garage 16 hours a day learning that thing. Like, it's my job until I find something profitable to do with it.
I love it.
Yeah. I think looking at for different avenues of what kind of fits your niche, like for you, it's podcasting, clearly. I mean, you're something you can build to make income. Mm-hmm. Is something that should be on everyone's radar. If you're of this mindset right now, you should be really putting some thought into what you can do. Do you ever listen to, or read much of Naval Ravikant, the tech guru?
I've either heard or read some things from him, but it's been a while.
Yeah, he's got some very powerful quotes. But he had a quote about how any situation in life, you can either accept it, change it, or leave it. Like, those mm-hmm. are your three options in every single challenge. So that's where people are getting put right now. It's like, are you going to accept this? You can't change it. That's not an option, and not until it collapses on itself. You're not going to be able to stop it. So it's really accept it or leave it. And mm-hmm. I'm going to be doing the latter if it does affect me.
Hey, let me start by commending you for, you know, standing on your principles and being willing to sacrifice something serious. Cause this is what I've been saying to people repeatedly, is like, if at no point you are willing to sacrifice something, this will never stop. Never. And the government will take this as far as they possibly can, because there has been no pushback basically the entire time. And I'm not calling for violence, but I am calling for people to, you know, practice what they preach a little bit here. Like, if you don't believe that you should have to get something put into your body in order to have employment, then tell your fucking employer to shove it up their ass. You know, like, I know it's very easy for me to say that, but this is like, I promise you, if I was working at Verizon Wireless when I was a broke ass 22, 23 year old, and they said I had to get injected with something to work there, I would have told them to shove it up their fucking ass. That's how I live. This is who I am. And, 100%. I just think that this is a red line, man. This is it. This is where we decide, do we want to allow this to continue? Because we should have never allowed for 15 days to slow the spread. We should have never allowed for mask mandates. We certainly shouldn't have allowed for mask mandates for children. Now we shouldn't have allowed for Vs for K-12, like what's happening in California. That's insane. And now we have Vs for employment. I mean, this slippery slope is not a joke, folks. Like, this is happening. And, you know, I think that the great thing about this is that the more you're willing to sacrifice right now, the less you're going to have to sacrifice. Because if enough people are willing to say, I will give up my income stream right now to tell you this is not acceptable, it ends. And we don't have to give up our income streams. So I really hope that people listening to this take that to heart. Realize that this is not futile. This is not hopeless. We have a chance to actually turn the tide of history. We have the chance to prevent war. I mean, that's where we're going. If we have a 10 to 15% population in this country that is never able to have a serious job, and they all have to enter the black market if they're not willing to get the V, that is groundwork for real social conflict moving forward. So if you believe in peace and you want peace, you kind of have to act like an asshole right now. So I hope more people will.
Agreed. And for anyone who's skeptical, saying like, oh, easy for you to say, you're a single guy with a decent amount of wealth. I'm 31. I have 5 miles of feet at home on one income, and I am on the same page. I am ready to figure it out. I guarantee you failure. My kids will not starve. They will not sleep at night in the streets. I will figure it out, because I have enough confidence in my skills and abilities, whether it be buying and selling sports cars or snowmobiles or building stuff. Like, I'll figure it out if I have to feed my kids. Like, and I'm not going to sit around watching NASCAR going, I don't know what to do now. Like, no, I'm going to be figuring it out. I'll downsize my house. I'll move in with my parents. I'll do whatever I got to do. It's not an option to fail.
Let me back this up with, I have talked to, I mean, hundreds of people have DM'd me about this, mm-hmm. and they're all saying the same thing. I mean, there is a real momentum behind this where like a huge percentage of the population is going to say, we're not doing this. And if there is that percentage of a population that follows through with this declaration, this shit'll end. They can't be like, I just talked to a couple pilots today. I was out on their boat and these guys both were like, I will quit my job. And these guys have been pilots for a long time. And for those that don't know, there aren't enough pilots to go around. So if you have 15% of a fleet that says we're done, the airline's done. I mean, you're in serious trouble as a business. And if you have 10 to 15% across the board, across all industries saying the same thing, the entire economy's done. So like we have the power. But we gotta take this opportunity to demonstrate it.
Yeah, I think it's important to find your like minds around you wherever you're employed or wherever you're being faced with these challenges, because people are afraid if they feel alone. Like you don't want to be the sheep that gets away from the herd, you know?
Right.
And then get the one that gets taken out by the wolf. But you know, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, to your point about, you know, how you're gonna find a way to make an income for your family. I mean, this is the time that the past 18 months have been the time to be finding another skill set, an entrepreneurial mm-hmm. outlet, some way to become more financially free, to be less dependent on, a large sized employer. And I hope that people have already begun that process. But if you haven't, it's not too late. It's just important that you do not delay any further. You have to put the time in, the energy, and most importantly, find your passion. Do something that you really care about. It's great if you can make money, and some people will just do that to survive. And I can respect that, especially if you have kids, you got to do what you got to do. But I'll tell you, if you are passionate about what you're doing, which I've been passionate about everything I've done in my life, basically, thank God. If you're passionate about what you're doing, not only will you not have to be hungry, but you'll actually end up accruing way more wealth, because you'll never do something you hate as well as you can do something you're passionate about. So I really hope that people do not just say, oh, well, I've delayed too much, and so now I'm just going to go be a, you know, garbage man or whatever job you would hate. I'm not shitting on garbage men. Just keep in mind, like, you can still make money doing what you're passionate about, but you got to really be passionate about it. And you got to really like hit it with all of your energy.
I think that's a great rule for life in general. Yes. I mean, I'm the same way. I've never stated a job I hated. If I did, I'd be gone. Like I don't like hating waking up. So no,
exactly.
Like, I'd just be gone and find something different.
You only live once, man. If you hate every day, like fuck that. Do not do that. That is a big inspiration from Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan's great about talking about that.
Like, that guy's living some different level of reality. But
well, he is. Awesome. He is. But I mean, think about how many millions of young men and women he has inspired to pursue their wildest dreams. I am one of them. If it weren't for Dave and Rogan, there's no doubt I'm not doing what I'm doing right now.
Sure.
So, what's great about it is like, not only is your life better, you get to inspire others to do, what they're passionate about. So just have faith.
The one thing I think Rogan doesn't get enough credit for, I was talking to my cousin about this a few weeks ago. I was like, he's really made being fit and healthy cool. Like people 100%. Look up to him, and it's not like a rock star where it's like they're doing drugs and just getting laid and staying out and partying. Like that's attractive to young men. Right. Like Rogan's made it like, hey, I'm in my 50s. Like, look at me, take care of your body, take these vitamins, like work out. Like that's invaluable when you have a platform as large as he has. Like for what that's going to do to young men listening to, and women, anyone listening to him, that's when he has these dietitian experts on and exercise mm-hmm. experts, like that's something that I don't know, not enough people talk about, but he's really kind of mainstreamed being fit and healthy into being like a cool bro, you know?
Right. No, you're right. It definitely, when I was younger, it was like just party all the time. And it wasn't so much about taking care of yourself physically. What I like is that not only does he talk about physical health, but he talks about spiritual health in a way too. Like he doesn't take it into the spiritual realm per se, but he talks about ayahuasca journeys, which, whether or not you know it, that's a very spiritual thing. And, you know, he's at Duncan Trussell. Duncan Trussell has been on the show a ton of times. He's probably my favorite guest. He led me down the spiritual path and the meditation path. I then found Ram Dass and be here now. And I learned that, you know, my anxiety disorder was manageable if I was able to bring myself to the present and stop worrying about the past so much, or the future for that matter. So like, yeah, I mean, my entire life has benefited from podcasts. Like, think about how crazy that is, but it's true. And mm-hmm. I love it because I now get to pay it forward, as they say. Like, I now have Carrie Wedler on my show and I talk about meditation with her because I believe in it. I think it's a really valuable thing, and I believe in financial freedom, and that's what I've done too. So like, I'm basically, what I'm saying is I am following in Rogan's footsteps, in that all he did was talk about his life experiences. It wasn't in a lecturing way per se, but it was just like, hey, I am a lot happier than the people listening to this right now, and here's why. And now I get to say the same thing. So I think it's great, man. I just think he's changed the world, really.
For sure. No, it's very cool to have this whole podcast experience in our generation, because it sounds like you put a lot of hours of listening in as well throughout the last
infinity.
I mean, I've been at my job for nearly 6 years, and I've been doing 1,000 miles a week every week since then. So I've, maybe for like the first 2 months, I was like, oh yeah, let's listen to some music. Yeah, it'll be great. And then after like 2 months of driving that much, you're like, fuck music, I can't do anymore. So I found podcasts, and that's right away. It was like Rogan, Stapleton, and then I found Tom Woods and Dave Smith, and like those are my regular back then.
Right.
And it's I think I mentioned this a couple episodes ago, but I looked at my Stitcher app, which I've had since 2016, not too long ago, and I think I've accrued more hours than a bachelor degree requires. Like, it's insane how many hours. Like,
oh, dude, I've listened to thousands of hours of Joe Rogan speak. I mean, think about how crazy that is. Yeah, I'm like almost an expert in Joe Roganology. So
yeah, it's like, it's so weird. He has no idea who you are, but you know so much about his life and his voice. And
exactly. I mean, that was the trippiest thing about meeting Dave, is and going on his show and having him come on mine multiple times. It was like I feel like I know you. You don't know me at all. I mean, he knew me from Twitter a little bit, but you know, it's just such a weird clash. And now the crazy thing is I have that happening to me, where I have people meeting me and saying, dude, I've been listening to your show all year. You've basically saved my sanity, because you were the only person that felt how I did about this. And that's so powerful to me, because like, I don't even know, you know, I see download numbers, but that doesn't mean anything. That doesn't give me any humanity to it. So when someone comes up to me and says like, man, you kept me sane, like it's so gratifying. I don't need to make a penny from this. That's honestly how I feel.
Yeah, that was very similar. Because I met Dave at Freedom Fest. My buddy and I were walking in on the first day, and he's outside. He's like texting somebody, so we didn't want to interrupt. I was like, oh shit, there's Dave. Like, I've never seen him in person. I've been listening to him for 5 years. And I was just like, I'm not going to bother him. He's texting. But he could tell that we recognized him. So he's like, what's up, guys? What's up? And like, so we went over. And then he saw our shirts. We had Paul's on the wall. He's like, oh shit, thanks for sponsoring the show.
That's awesome. Yeah.
He was like, I mean, just as cool in person as you expected, just super nice guy. We chatted for like 5 minutes, but it was so weird. I was like, oh yeah, I've been listening to you for like 5 years. He goes, oh wow. Well, thanks. I really appreciate that. Yeah. I'm like, oh fuck, you don't know that. Like,
I know, right?
It's so bizarre.
and then when he starts talking, you're just like, everything he like leads to, you kind of know where he's going, because you just know how his brain works after a while. Like, that's how I felt with Dave when we were talking. The only thing was he didn't hold back as much. Like, he was definitely willing to say it exactly how he felt. It was like,
that's awesome.
He was all guns blazing. But yeah, he's an amazing guy. I mean, that's the other cool thing about long form podcasts, is like, after X amount of hours, people can't hold the mirage, you know, they can't hold the persona. If you're not who you are, people are going to sense it. And I think that's also part of the reason that I've been successful with the podcast game, is that like, this is who I am, man. So like, there's no performative nature to what I'm doing. Like, this is genuinely how I feel. And I am genuinely this passionate. I wouldn't do it if I wasn't. So it was really great to meet Dave and get to learn that firsthand. Like, he is the true blue deal.
Dude, I mean, I'll say that about everyone I met at Freedom Fest. I mean, did you get a chance to talk to like Gene Epstein at all
when you were there? Well, I've had him on my show, but I did not meet Gene at Freedom Fest.
So he's been on our show 4 times, including Freedom Fest. He did a live one there, but we had been messaging back and forth for months leading up to Freedom Fest. And he's like, yeah, he does like his Soho dinner. So he invited us out to that. And we were trying to do it, but then like, we didn't make reservations. Everything was booked, so it didn't work out. It was the end of the story. But the first day I got there, I'm at registration line, and I look back and I see Gene. And once again, I've never seen this guy in person. I'm just on screens and, you know, talking to him on a podcast. And I was like, oh, there's Gene. So I was like, and he told me to like look him up when I got there. Like, I had his cell phone number. And I turn around and like, I walk up and he's like talking to one of his buddies. And I was like, oh, shit. I don't want my first impression to be like interrupting to say hi. And I also have this hover rule that my brother and I established. Like, you don't hover around someone more than like 7 seconds. If they don't turn to you and acknowledge you, keep moving. Right? You're just like another creepy fan. So I just keep moving. So finally I see Gene, and, you know, by then I had my registration with my name tag on there. And I was like, hi, Mr. Epstein. And he looks at me and doesn't know who I am, looks down at my name tag. He goes, Mike, oh, it's my poll boys. And gives me this big bear hug. I'm like, oh, hell yeah. Like, right? That went better than I thought. But it was just, and then we hung out for, I mean, he met my wife and kids, my parents. We had lunch together. We podcasted together there. It was like, this is like, you're like the godfather of libertarian podcasters. Like, this is so bizarre.
Yeah.
That, like, and he kept like complimenting my show, saying he listens to it. And I'm like, dude, this is fucking blowing my mind. Like,
I know. It's so crazy. I mean,
yeah.
That's the other thing that's blown my mind. When prior to me getting to know Dave, he had followed me on Twitter, and he brought up, well, he's talking to Dave Rubin, and he was on Lions of Liberty with Dave Rubin, and he brings up my tweet, and he paraphrases my tweet, and he doesn't give me any credit because he didn't know who I was at the time. But it was just like, I am literally already influencing the people who influenced me. Like, that is so wild. And and now I'm friends with him, like, genuinely. And that's
awesome.
Even more wild. Like, it's so crazy. But I think that the thing that I've now learned, because I am now kind of like not looked up to, but appreciated by a handful of other people, is that when they meet me, they also are surprised that I'm, you know, as kind and grateful and loving to
I can anybody. Vouch for it. It's true. Yeah.
See, there you go. And people are surprised by it. I'm like, look, we are all just passionate people. None of us are making billions of dollars doing this. Like, we are doing this for the right reasons. So you're not dealing with like running into Kanye West in the mall. Like, Dave Smith is super famous to us, but he's not like,
he can go shopping. He can go to Walmart and not get recognized by 95% of people. Yeah. It's the perfect level of fame, really.
I couldn't agree more. And I love the fact that throughout 99.9% of my life, no one knows who I am. And then I go to some libertarian event and half the people know who I am. I think that's the perfect way to live, because it's, you get to feel both, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, even our show is as small and in its infancy as it is.
Right.
We had probably a dozen people come up, like, that knew our show, listened to like a lot of stuff, were, like, happy to meet us.
So,
and
cool,
like,
man.
And there's even like one chick that was a pilot saying like she didn't know anyone. And she messaged us on Twitter saying she like, but only came because he heard we were coming. And I'm like,
oh, that's incredible.
So I was like, that's pretty wild. I was like, this is pretty cool to have like a following. Like you said, like, I didn't know. I see numbers. I'd never see faces or names.
Yeah.
So it's kind of
like,
cool.
You're like, are these people just downloading and not listening? And then you run into them and they're like, they're quoting you, and you're like, oh shit. All right. Yeah. You definitely are listening.
Yeah. It feels really weird too. Cause it's like, you're so like, even some of my like old high school friends have found out about the podcast, and they've been like, oh, I'm gonna check this out. And they'll go back to my old first 10 episodes. I'm like, dude, I don't know what I said, but I feel like it probably sucks because it was so long ago. And then I listened back to them once in a while for a little bit. I'm like, I would have published it if I didn't think it was decent. So all right.
I should go back and listen to my first 10. I bet it's not great, but I haven't done it yet. I'm just all eyes forward.
Yeah, man. No, I think that's it's probably the right path to stay on.
Yeah, for now. I mean, maybe I'll, you know, 10 years from now, I'll go back and listen to my first episodes and be like, whoa, that was shitty.
Yeah. Even from my first podcast that we did, I still have all the files saved from 2016 from my car podcast. And like, even though it's like the RSS feed's been deleted, no one can even find them, I feel like, I don't want to listen to them. It's just like, it's like a bad, embarrassing picture of yourself. Like, I don't know. Totally. It's probably fine, but it's just like, it's weird looking back on it. I don't
I mean, for me, it's only been a year and a half. So it's like, I'm sure it's not. What's probably really wild is I think that I was, because at the time I didn't have any listeners and I didn't feel as if there was a community that was like vibing with me and seeing the same dangers I was probably way more aggro that I am now. You know, now I feel some semblance of hope because I have so many people that are listening and telling me and DMing me and, you know, all this stuff and meeting me and thanking me. And it's like, all right, well, that means that they're, I'm not alone in this. And I hope everyone can feel that some at some point in the near future, is that like, we're not alone in this fight. Like it, if you're on the cusp of losing your job, there are millions of people feeling the exact same way you are right now.
Right.
And what's that?
And find them. Just see those are the people you want to stick with. The like.
Yeah. Find them. Talk to them. Be as vocal as you can right now, man. Cause like this is do or die time. If we let this one through, I don't think there's any going back. That's my honest opinion.
And I'll recommend to people, I know you said you're not like a super religious person last time we spoke, but, and I was raised strict Catholic and then I kind of got away all through my 20s, but having kids, I kind of slowed back down and we go to a non-denominational, church now in our little 3,000 person town here. And I will say there is a network there that I see why this has been around since the dawn of man. Like we are surrounded by like minds, people my age with large families, all late 20s, early 40s, all with 2 to 5 kids each. 90% of them homeschool. They talked my wife into homeschooling now. It's been like the best thing. That's like, I mean, I look forward to every Sunday morning. It's like my favorite part of the week because there's so many just like minds. You know, it's not about following some organized religion and doing all these ceremonial things. If that's what makes you cringe about it, then don't join one of those. Right. This is like a non-denominational one where it's just a lot of good people that live by these values, much like libertarianism. They live by Christian values, which very much intertwine.
Yep. Yeah. And I think what you're describing is community instead of religion. Yeah, and, for sure. And, you know, my religion, my community is the libertarian world now, you know, like it, I do feel saved by it in a weird way, you know.
Funny story. So the week my wife got talked into homeschooling was the week we got back from Freedom Fest. And when I was at Freedom Fest, I interviewed Connor Boyack, who is the author of the Tuttle Twins series, which I love his book series ever since my daughter started reading.
Right.
I heard him on Tom Woods years ago, but it was long before my daughter could read. But now she got into reading, and our library is full of radical indoctrination books, so I don't even allow her inside there. So I'm like, no, this is like food. There's healthy and there's junk. Like, we're going to only put healthy in your brain. So yeah. I talked to Connor there for a while. They're also making a TV show. Had a great conversation with him. And I don't tell anyone in my community about my podcast because, like, we're pretty non-traditional with mainstream opinion, whether you be right or left. So I'm going to piss either one of you off if you're traditional mindset. But the woman who talked my wife into homeschooling was talking about these different curriculums. And I was like, oh, yeah. And the Tuttle Twins have one. And she's like, oh, yeah, the Tuttle Twins. We're looking into that one. And I was like, wait, you know the Tuttle Twins? Like, this is the first time I talked to her. And she goes, yeah, I just heard them on a podcast that she listens to about homeschooling. Like, Connor was on that show talking. And I was like, I interviewed the author on Saturday. She's like, wait, what? I was like, actually, I got 2 copies of the whole series. So I went home. We had a church picnic that day. I brought back a full series of all 12 books for her. It just like blew her mind. It's like her first time talking to us. I'm like, oh yeah, no, like I'm deep in this world. Like these are my people.
these are my people, sister. Yeah, no, that's beautiful.
Yeah, that's fun. But yeah, man, I mean we're at a little past 50 minutes, but anything you want to close on?
I mean, I would just say that like really, like I know we're just talking into a microphone, and I know you know, we still joked and we had a bunch of points of levity in this conversation, but like the moment you are living through right now is so heavy. It's so important. Like, I genuinely believe you are living through one of the most important points in human history. Do not comply. Do not comply. I can't emphasize this enough. Like, try and give your business to places that don't require masks. Definitely don't give your business to any businesses that require V's for their employees or for customers. Like, make them pay a price for treating you as if you don't own your own body. Like that's the key here. And as for past the heaviness of that note, I have an incredible lineup coming up over the next couple of weeks. I can't even remember all the names, but another guy who got me into podcasting, and I cannot believe he's coming on my show, is Adam Curry of No Agenda Podcast. I am so thrilled to have him. He's a VJ for MTV in the 80s. And then he went on to having in my opinion, the greatest podcast ever in No Agenda. It's just phenomenal. It has absolutely inspired so many of the topics that I've covered on my show in depth. I also have Dave Rubin just confirmed for third week of October, which is enormous. I have David Limbrick coming on tomorrow. He is the MP for Victoria in Australia. That'll be an incredible conversation. He told me, I probably can't say what he DM'd me, but it's, trust me, you don't want to miss that one. I've got, I don't even know. Just trust me. You want to check it out. So subscribe to Liberty Lockdown.
I think I saw Ian Crossland too, right?
Ian Crossland, yeah. Lids from Timcast, as well. I mean, literally the list is insane. Zuby, a bunch, just keep going. It's incredible. I don't even know why people are saying yes like this. It's wild.
No, dude, I mean, your show has like moved its way into my feed. Like I said, last time I talked to you, I didn't know I needed another one. I thought Tom and Dave was all I really needed to know everything that's going on in the Liberty world. But it's like, no, you offer something different and confidently. And no, it's great. Everyone should, if you follow my show, you should definitely check out Clint.
And vice versa, brother.
Yeah, thank you. But yeah, dude, I appreciate your time. This is great. Yeah, absolutely. You're welcome back anytime, dude.
Thank you so much. It's always a blast.
All right. Take care.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.